Hi, I'm Josh Levine. My podcast, The Queen, tells the story of Linda Taylor. She was a con artist, a kidnapper, and maybe even a murderer. She was also given the title The Welfare Queen, and her story was used by Ronald Reagan to justify slashing aid to the poor. Now, it's time to hear her real story. Over the course of four episodes, you'll find out what was done to Linda Taylor, what she did to others, and what was done in her name.
The great lesson of this, for me, is that people will come to their own conclusions based on what their prejudices are.
Subscribe to The Queen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening right now.
Last year, reporter Bram Sable-Smith started hanging out in these private Facebook groups.
These groups started forming because, you know, I'm in Wisconsin, and Wisconsin, just like every state in the country, saw a record number of unemployment claims. Record numbers of people were losing their jobs. People who, you know, you would often hear people saying, like, I never thought that I would lose my job, but suddenly here we are.
At first, there were only a few hundred people in these digital support groups. Then a few thousand. And once they got over the shock of being laid off, the people here started sorting through their anger. They were often dealing with unemployment systems that were overloaded. They would trade tips and tricks for how to get help.
People could vent. They could, you know, they could share tips about ways to reach the department that administers unemployment to maybe help their case move along a little quicker.
One of the top tricks Bram saw folks recommending was call a politician. Get an elected official to adopt your cause, advocate for you.
I talked to one representative here in Madison who won election last year, and she inherited from her predecessor a list of people whose claims were still in progress that she could then start to follow up on so that, you know, they wouldn't drop the ball.
No one thought this was a good system, but it was a system. And then, very suddenly, a year into the pandemic, something changed.
Everybody was a champion for these people who had lost their jobs. And then that switched.
The new jobs report, CNN chief business correspondent Christine Roman's here with me at the desk. We're going to bring in the numbers right now
so
you can
look
see
at
it here.
Numbers,
and the answer is a giant miss, right?
It started with a disappointing jobs report.
And we've heard from employers that a big problem is they can't find the workers to hire, especially in
And this jobs report became fodder for a theory.
Restaurants are closing because they can't find anyone to hire, so are manufacturing plants.
A theory that government benefits were causing workers to sit on their hands.
Why is this happening? Well, there's too much cash in the system.
Anytime you give somebody free money over long periods of times, it stops them from growing. It stops them from working hard. It's against everything that this country is built on. It's about hard work.
Sometime around April or May of this year, the rhetoric changed.
That is when Bram's sources, the workers themselves, started going silent.
For me, as a reporter, it suddenly became harder for me to get people to go on the record sharing their stories.
Why? Why do you think that is? Were they ashamed in some way?
Absolutely. I mean, people said that explicitly to me. At some point, it seems like we just decided that everyone's going to go back to work. But no one was asking the workers, what's going on? How's your work search going? Are you feeling comfortable going back to work? Are you having success finding jobs that work for you?
Today on the show, what workers say about why so many of them are not yet back on the job. I'm Mary Harris. You're listening to What Next. Stick around. This episode is brought to you by Discover. When it comes to your finances, Discover wants you to know they are the credit card that is always there for you. With 24/7 US-based live customer service, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We are talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. To understand why so many people are still unemployed now, a year and a half into the pandemic. Bram Sable-Smith says it helps to zoom out, remember each step along the way. So let's go back. It's March of 2020. Unemployment's just spiked. And the federal government is beginning to respond by flooding state governments with assistance. But if you look at a state like Wisconsin, where Bram lives, you can see how simply opening a spigot of cash caused problems, too. The local systems just weren't able to deal with it. And as a result, the unemployed had to fight for their benefits.
We spent, you know, the previous 10 years really seeing a tax on the social safety net. So when it came time for it to be in use, despite all the, you know, record amounts of extra funding that have gone into it, it really was leaving a lot of people behind during all of this.
In Wisconsin, for instance, there was this rule. People getting disability could not also get unemployment assistance, even though the feds said these workers qualified for checks. It took months to figure that one out. On top of that, the computer systems in the state, they were simply too old to keep up with the demand.
It absolutely was not ready for the volume of people that were there. Something about the unemployment system in many states, and Wisconsin is one of them, is that the technology it uses is completely outdated. We're talking about a system that has to be programmed sequentially and that can only do one thing at a time. So, you know, one of the calls in Wisconsin was that we needed the call centers to be open 24 hours a day. That's what some critics were saying, so that people could be able to call with their questions about the unemployment system, about their claims to see, hey, what's going on? Can we move things along a little bit better? But what that call doesn't recognize is that because of the data technology that the system uses, they actually have to shut down the call centers because they can't have the people on the phone accessing the system at the same time that the system is doing something like writing the checks that go out to the people who are getting unemployment benefits. It can't do two things at the same time.
So it needs the overnight to like rest and make checks.
Exactly. It needs to stop the part where you can, you know, adjudicate someone's claim so that it can start the part where it's adjudicating checks.
Did most of the people you spoke with eventually get the benefits that they needed? Or that they were owed?
Yes. Yes. For the most part.
Did it feel like a victory when that happened?
It's one of the things that feels frustrating. I wrote in March about a man who had waited a year to get unemployment benefits. So he had basically fallen into every hurdle that anyone in the unemployment system had faced. He fell into basically every single one of them. So first, he was denied because he receives disability help. Then he was denied because he lost an appeal. Then he got held up in this appeals process that takes many months. Then he won his case, but it took, you know, another several months to get into the system. So he ended up waiting basically a year for his unemployment benefits. When I spoke to him, he had won all that stuff, but he was still waiting for his benefits.
Still.
It took many, many weeks for his decision, for the judgment that said this guy qualifies. It took many weeks for that to get entered in the computer system. So even after he won his case, he was still waiting several weeks to actually get the funds that go into his account. And we ran a story and he got paid the next day.
Huh. You don't think that's a coincidence, it sounds like.
You know, I asked the Department of Workforce Development if they, you know, if the story had anything to do with it. And they said, oh, you know, we have many cases, you know, they basically didn't admit it. But the timing seems like the story had an impact on when he got paid. And, you know, from a personal perspective, it's like, great, there's the power of journalism. We can help people who are struggling in the social safety net to access what they're owed, what they're due. But on the other hand, it's really frustrating that this is what people have to do to get the benefits that are promised to them in the system to keep them afloat during, you know, the worst economic catastrophe of our lifetime.
So people came together because they couldn't figure out how to get the benefits, even though the federal government was clearly saying, like, okay, we're going to pump money into this system for you. So how are they getting by? Like, how are they living their day-to-day lives? They still had mortgages to pay and car payments and all that stuff.
you know, when you're talking about what was common and what was unique among the unemployed during the pandemic, there's a lot of commonalities in the problem they had, and the uniqueness really happens in how they dealt with it and what happened to people. People were facing impossible situations. People were leaving their houses. People were losing their houses. I spoke to one woman, Karen Miller. You know, this is someone who was working in Wisconsin. She lived in Illinois. She waited, it ended up being 11 weeks for her unemployment to come. She owns a home with her son. He waited 13 weeks for unemployment help to come. So that's 3 months that they're waiting. In that time, they spent down their entire savings so that they could stay current on their mortgage and stay in their home.
Did they ever think of applying for, like, mortgage relief? I know that was another program that was available to some homeowners.
They did. So they got a forbearance. This is another CARES Act thing. Homeowners were able to get up to 18 months where they could kind of defer their payments on their mortgage. They qualified for that, but they decided, even though they qualified for it, they wanted to stay current on their mortgage. So they ended up paying that anyway.
So Karen Miller spent down her savings to keep up with expenses. And that means now she really does need a job. But there's a problem. The jobs that are available are not necessarily jobs she can take.
One of the biggest problems she has is that, you know, she'd love to get back to work. She had a great job digitizing government documents, which, you know, doesn't sound like the sexiest job to a lot of people, but she really enjoyed it. She lost that work, and she would love to get another similar job. You know, she has a heart condition that prevents her from doing too much physical work. So a desk job would be great for her. But when she's doing her work searches, the jobs that are coming back to her are for things like warehouse work or delivery driving, things that she can't really physically do. Or she's also, you know, receiving job postings for like registered nurse jobs, which is a credential she doesn't have. So in her case, the thing that's really holding her back is finding a job that she's able to do. And that seems to be the case for a lot of people.
Yeah, hearing Karen's stories and the stories of other people you spoke to, there seemed to be like a real mismatch in the kind of jobs that are out there and the people who are seeking work. People like Karen, who can't just go be a waitress, like that's just not in the cards for her. And then at the same time, Wisconsin politicians are looking to put pressure on people like the folks you spoke to kind of force them back into work. A lot of states are doing this. They're saying, we're not going to extend benefits from the federal government to you anymore. Like, we're going to cut those off because we really think that people need to be getting back to work. And so, you know, having these benefits is too much of a cushion. It's keeping people out of the workforce. Can you tell the story of that fight in Wisconsin in particular? Because Wisconsin is a particular place. There's a Democratic governor, but there's Republican-controlled legislature. So how did that fight play out?
So, you know, about half of states have ended this federal supplement for unemployment. It's changed throughout the pandemic how much it's been. Right now, it's an extra $300 a week. About half of states have ended that. And in Wisconsin, the Republicans who control the legislature very much have wanted to do that as well.
And were local politicians able to get a bill on the floor and get it through to the governor?
Yeah. In Wisconsin, the Wisconsin legislature actually passed a bill ending the federal supplemental payments, but that was vetoed by the governor. And then just recently, they tried to override the veto, but were unable to do so. So we still in Wisconsin have this $300 extra federal supplemental unemployment benefit that's being paid to people, $300 a week. It's still in place, but that expires in September.
The thing Bram noticed as he spoke with people relying on these unemployment benefits is that many of them, they don't want to be reliant on these benefits. Like Karen Miller, who kept paying her mortgage even after she qualified for relief. There's this element of dignity at play. If many of the people he spoke to could find appropriate work that paid them a living wage, then take it.
It's something I heard a lot that I never thought it would be me. I never thought I would be on unemployment. I never thought I would be in this position. That's something I absolutely heard a lot as I was talking to people who were going through the system. There's a lot of people who are really proud, you know, really proud and don't want to be accepting public benefit like this. And there was something about the pandemic earlier when there was a common understanding that there was something really drastic, really radical happening, and it made it okay. It was okay to be on unemployment because you never thought you'd be here. And this, it took this enormous event that we didn't see coming that, you know, dramatically changed the entire society to make it okay for a little bit. And then that's kind of changed again. Even the people who are saying, you know, Karen Miller is an example. Even someone like Karen Miller who says she sees how she's being, how people who are on unemployment are being referred to in the media, you know, being made out as lazy people. In Wisconsin, the Speaker of the Assembly in Wisconsin called the extra added $300 unemployment benefits that are coming from the federal government. He referred to that as a disincentive to work that prompts mischief among the unemployed. She hears that language. And even she was telling me that, like, I'm sure there's probably someone out there who's doing this. But the majority of us, we're not lazy people. We're people who were working. And then we lost our jobs.
After the break, how waiting on those initial benefit payments is raising the stakes for people who remain out of work now.
If you want to understand what is happening in the United States right now, you really need to understand what's happening with the courts, the law, and the Supreme Court. The battle between democracy and whatever this cage match is that we're witnessing, it's going to be won and lost at the ballot box, but it's also going to be won and lost in the courtrooms. I'm Dahlia Lithwick. I host Slate's legal podcast, Amicus, and we are doubling our output, bringing you weekly episodes from here on in, because how else can we keep an eye on the many trials of Donald Trump, the conservative legal movement's assaults on our rights, the Supreme Court's latest slate of environmental gutting, gun safety eviscerating cases on the docket? So follow Amicus wherever you get your podcasts, new episodes dropping every Saturday morning.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Hey, listeners, whether you love true crime or comedies, celebrity interviews, news, or even motivational speakers, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue, right? And guess what? Now you can call the shots on your auto insurance, too. Enter the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. The Name Your Price tool puts you in charge of your auto insurance by working just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance. Then they'll show you a variety of coverages that fit within your budget, giving you options. Now, that's something you'll want to press play on. It's easy to start a quote, and you'll be able to choose the best option for you fast. It's just one of the many ways you can save with Progressive Insurance. Quote today at progressive.com to try the Name Your Price tool for yourself and join over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Part of what I think is interesting about your reporting is that by showing the real impact of the first half of the pandemic and the fight over benefits, it explains a little bit this moment that we're in now where it seems like people aren't taking jobs that are available. And when I say that, I'm thinking specifically of one man's story you told, this guy, Pierre Young, because he got through the pandemic, but the way he got through the pandemic while he was waiting for benefits was by selling his vehicles. And so now that he's looking for work again, he doesn't have a car to get there. And so the fact that the benefits were delayed are having a concrete impact on him now when he's ready to work, he wants to work, but there are real limitations to what he can do.
Yeah, I mean, Pierre is really struggling. So Pierre, this is another person who receives Social Security disability insurance. In Wisconsin, in order to get unemployment benefits, if you're on Social Security disability insurance. First, you have to get denied for regular unemployment benefits, and then you apply. Only then you can apply for the pandemic unemployment benefits. And, you know, he's being denied those benefits now because they're saying his paperwork wasn't submitted in a timely manner. He didn't submit his pay stubs in a timely manner, which he says he didn't realize he had to do that. But anyway, he's appealing that decision. And the appeals process can take many months. So he's just sitting here struggling. And yeah, like you said, he had two trucks, a 1998 Chevy Tahoe and a 2002 Dodge Ram pickup that he described as a beater with a heater. He sold both of them together for $800, which helped him pay his rent. But now, you know, he still hasn't received unemployment benefits and he's looking for work, but he doesn't have a car to get there. He's a handyman. He found, I think on Indeed.com, he found a 12-week construction job that he would love to do. He said, oh, this is perfect for me. But it's in Iowa and he's in Milwaukee. You know, that's a long drive. He can't get to that construction site. So the decisions he's had to make to stay afloat, to keep a roof over his head while he's waiting for the benefits to come are impacting his ability to find the work that can get him out of this situation.
It strikes me we're at this really interesting moment where for the last year and a half, we poured so much money at the federal level into these local systems. And by doing that, we kind of figured out where the problems were. Like you talked about how in Wisconsin, the system just wasn't able to handle people 24/7, how there was this disability unemployment mismatch that caused people to not be able to access benefits for a certain period of time. And that's kind of valuable, actually, to learn those things about the system. But I wonder if, after learning those things, the state is repairing the problems that have become evident through this process, or instead is just saying, like, let's pull the benefits back and problems remain, but we're just not going to stress out the system in the same way.
I think to a certain extent, it remains to be seen. I think there's no question that the pandemic has exposed, this pandemic has exposed so many cracks in our social safety net, and unemployment is unquestionably one of them. And there's a lot of people who think that this is a moment that, you know, now that we can see this with clarity, what's wrong with the system, now's the moment to fix it. But that's a fight that could take time to play out. I mean, that's a question that remains to be seen if it's going to get an answer right now.
I wonder if talking to people who are actually unemployed, you came out of that with an idea of what politicians should do if they actually want to get people back to work, if there was something that became clear to you through your reporting.
To a certain extent, it could be as simple as money.
What do you mean by that?
Well, if you look at the average unemployment benefit in Wisconsin, and then you tack on the $300 supplement, and you divide by 40, right? So what's the hourly wage equivalent that someone who's receiving unemployment with the federal supplement, what's the equivalent of an hourly wage? It comes out to a little under $15 an hour. There's a lot of people in the country who are pushing for a $15 an hour minimum wage. There's a lot of jobs that offer $15 an hour. If you do take at face value that one of the impediments of hiring people, getting people back to work, is competing with the assistance people are getting from the unemployment system. If you take at face value that that's a problem, and the way to beat it is with a wage that's higher, you know, $15 is right there. $15 is a higher wage than the average person is making in equivalency with the unemployment benefits. To a certain extent, money is an issue. There's also a mismatch of people who are wanting to find a certain amount of dignity in their work. I mean, I interviewed a 44-year-old bartender who's worked in the service industry, you know, for over 20 years, and he's leaving. He can't take it anymore. Bartenders were people who were being asked to enforce things like mask wearing during the pandemic. And that's something that a lot of people didn't want to do. He got heckled a lot. And he was saying, like, I don't have to take this anymore. I don't get paid enough to deal with having to be the mask enforcer. And so he's leaving the industry.
So have you been able to talk to any of the people you've been following about what their plans are for the fall? Because in September, these extended unemployment benefits, they're scheduled to go away.
I think the plan is what it's always been. And it's to get back to work. When I'm talking to these people, the unemployment benefits have been helpful. There's no question about it. But it hasn't changed the fact that they've been searching for work. People who are looking for work are going to continue looking for work and hoping that they find that. That's plan number one. Because one way or another, unemployment is going to end. The federal supplements are going to go away. It's never meant to be a permanent thing. Unemployment's always been there to be in place to get people through the hard times as a bridge until they can find stable work again. That hasn't changed. It's maybe just a question of whether you think people still need a bridge right now.
Bram Sable-Smith, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Mary.
Bram Sable-Smith reports on the social safety net in Wisconsin. And that's the show. What Next is produced by Mary Wilson, Carmel Delshad, Davis Land, Danielle Hewitt, and Elena Schwartz. We get help each and every day from Allison Benedict and Alicia Montgomery. And I'm Mary Harris. I will catch you back in this feed tomorrow.